Are you out of alignment with your health and your body? Has being healthy become complicated, overwhelming, especially as you age? Well, if you're like most women that I work with, you're probably disconnected from your body, out of alignment with your goals and your life, and maybe even stuck in health information overload. But what if being healthy could actually be simple? What if you could put down the war on willpower and find ease in your healing journey? And most importantly, what if you actually honored your needs as a woman as they change throughout every decade and stage of life? Ellie Kempton is here today on the show to drive us into a beautiful conversation around self-compassion, metabolic health, and actually learning how to build tolerance for stress in our life as we age. Ellie and I have a powerful deep dive conversation in all things health, healing, and wellness, and I cannot wait to share this episode with you. So without further ado, let's go ahead and play this amazing interview with Ellie right now. Welcome to the Beyond Sugar Freedom Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Dame, sugar freedom expert and somatic embodiment coach. Together, we'll be diving into much more than just another conversation around sugar addiction and nutrition. But more importantly, I'll be guiding you through the inner work, mindset shifts, and emotional healing that ultimately lies at the root of your unhealthy habits with food. Are you ready? Let's dive in. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode here on the Beyond Sugar Freedom Podcast. Today, we are being joined by a very special guest. Ellie Kempton is here with us today. Welcome to the show, Ellie.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. We're so excited to have you. And I'm very excited to be having this conversation with you. Before we dive in any deeper with Ellie, I want to give a quick background as to who Ellie is. As a biochemist and functionally trained dietitian, Ellie Kempton is on a mission to open up a conversation about what women need to find realignment within every transition between their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. Her work is focused on honoring the needs of our gorgeous biochemistry and harnessing the power of our hormones to thrive. Ellie Kempton is the founder of Simply Nourished, and at her very core is a lifestyle architect, empowering women to reclaim their wellness through agency. As a registered dietitian with a master's degree in functional nutrition from Bastyr University and a biochemistry degree from the University of Virginia, Ellie curates simplicity out of complex health information and provides care calibrated to support transformation. Ellie's care is underpinned by functional medicine and is catalyzed by behavior design. And I love that. I think, Ellie, so many listening can relate to this overwhelm or this complexity of when it comes to our hormones, when it comes to our health, when it comes to our nutrition. It's complicated. So we appreciate people like you bringing it down, helping us simplify. And I know we're going to have a powerful conversation today. So thank you again for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me, because that's truly my intention and my heart behind every conversation, is to really open up this thread of wisdom and maybe weave it through everything we do of how do we get past the noise? How do we get back to the signal? How do we curate simplicity? Because what I've found in my practice and what I've experienced to be true just firsthand is that we are inundated with so much information and so many very thoughtful and well-meaning pieces of advice of what to do. And we lose sight of even how we feel or what's aligned and what's misaligned. And so anytime I get this chance to put on a microphone and talk to a beautiful group of women about reclaiming their health and reclaiming their agency, I'm going to be doing it through the lens of simplicity. That is the foundation. Yeah. And ultimately that catalyzes sustainment.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I love that. I know we're kind of just like diving right in. This wasn't the question I wanted to start with, but I think this is so, so beautiful because we both agreed to just flow with it today. In like that, that struggle that I know so many women have of getting so overwhelmed and making being healthy so complicated. And like you said, right? And I can just hear all of my clients and all of the listeners here, right? Struggling with sugar specifically, knowing that like all the things that we've said we have to do in order to build a healthy relationship with sugar or break from our sugar addiction patterns becomes so overwhelming that we become paralyzed, right? When things become complicated, when you have too many choices, there are too many things to do, our human tendency is just to not do any of them, right? And we'll just not actually make any progress in that. So I love, yeah, absolutely love what you're saying. And like taking all of this great information, making it simple and applying it to what really works in our life. So we're going to get deeper into that. But before we go any deeper, Ellie, I do want to invite you to share a little bit more with all of us, with the listeners, with myself, your story. You know, I know we all have a story in terms of what got us into the work we were doing. So would love to hear, you know, what inspired you to get into this health space and this amazing message that you're sharing with the world?
Yes, well, it definitely plays a tremendous role in the way I teach, because what I heard you describing was my story, that willpower that you just described, that effort, that grit, that was me. I found my journey and what I do now in a swimming pool. A chlorinated swimming pool was my home as a little four-year-old. I was a fish and I loved to compete. I was a competitive swimmer at a very young age. And I learned early on that hard must mean good. And I took that to the nth degree. So I swam my way all the way into college. I swam for University of Virginia. And that was an environment that really amplified that grit factor, that willpower, that just absolute pedal to the metal culture was what I thrived in. And while I was there, and I would say even well before I was swimming at a collegiate level, I started to notice a few things, a few whisperings from the body, those blinking lights on my dashboard that I just ignored. We all do it, right? And it really wasn't until I was 2 years into college that those blinking lights started to make some noise. And I started to tune into some of them. But it wasn't until I was about to swim at Olympic trials that I couldn't ignore those lights anymore. My belly hurt. My body ached. I wasn't recovering from practice quite as quickly. And here I was in this rigorous science degree, biochemistry, just feeling like I couldn't even retain things cognitively. And that was scary to me. So I just started to look for answers. And really at the heart of what I was feeling was just that my gut was not well. And it turns out that I had Crohn's disease. And so really you can sit there and almost laugh to yourself thinking, holy cow, that was a lot of maybe oversight in really learning to not tune into the body. And I take it very seriously now to help the women under my care learn how to tune into their body so that they don't reach the degree of just misalignment that I ended up in. And in knowing what was going on clinically, and then in knowing what I knew with my just beginnings of a degree in biochemistry, I just started asking a lot of questions. I really started to explore what it would look like to treat Crohn's. And at the time, none of the interventions really resonated with me. So I just kept looking, because the idea of being on medication for a long period of time or anything surgical just did not strike a chord. And I knew enough to be dangerous, we'll say. So I searched hard enough to find what is now called a functional medicine doctor in Virginia. And she sat me down and just asked me very thoughtful questions that you ask your clients every day. And I hear you talk about on your podcast, which are just simple questions like, well, what do you eat? And do you sleep? And what are your stress levels? And no one admittedly had ever asked me those questions. So it drew me in. I felt this resonance by just the simplicity and the curiosity, and she wanted to know me at a human level. So I was hooked, and I really dug into her protocol of care and really started to see change. It was slow and steady, but it felt sustainable. So having experienced that firsthand, I decided I had to work in functional medicine. And really my passion was around the role food and lifestyle design play in healing. So that's what set my compass. I went straight from Virginia out to get that master's and really dig into the science of this and understand it. The little geeky scientist in me had to understand the backdrop and the foundation of all of this. And now, having been in practice for over a decade, I really just pride myself on taking all of that science, that those interventions that we hear about, and really putting them in the context of being a human being, being messy, being imperfect, having motivation some days and not other days. Because at the end of the day, being able to apply an intervention in an imperfect environment is what's going to breed sustainability. So I now work with women around the country and really dig into, as I said, our beautiful biochemistry, our gorgeous bodies, and explore what's going on with blinking lights on many dashboards, but all through the lens of human compassion, seeing other women, helping them feel seen, and really creating an environment where there is this reclamation of agency, where the woman sitting across from me or the woman listening to me believes in themselves, because that's truly what changed the script for me. When I started to believe that my food and my actions could heal my body, it's almost like there was this little sprinkling of magic.
Yeah. Wow. So beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story. That is really powerful. And I love the way that you explain that, and your energy as you're even talking about this is really, really empowering and really inspiring. And I know we have a lot in common in that. A lot of what you were saying, I was like, yes, yes, yes. Like this agency and this truth that we all need to come back to, and we'll get there in some shape or form, hopefully, that we can really clearly understand and believe, like we have for centuries, that our bodies have the ability to heal themselves, right? And they actually want to, and they're actually communicating to us to try to help them. And all of this, you know, really just involves us getting out of our own way and starting to listen in a new way. And I absolutely love, you know, obviously how you were able to do that for yourself, and that you knew enough to go see a functional medical doctor, which is so beautiful. And I know a lot of people maybe don't have the resources for that. And it can be a bit of a challenge, but there's lots of amazing, you know, resources out there nowadays. And even just listening to this episode and knowing that, right, and believing that your body can heal and you do have a lot of power, right? Like how often have we've spent our whole lives, I know I speak a lot to this, just completely giving our power away, especially when it comes to our health, right? Thinking everyone else has the answers, right? That doctor in the white lab coat or that commercial that I just watched, right? Like has all the answers for what I need. So I really appreciate your approach there.
Thank you. Thank you. It definitely has set the tone for how I teach and how I listen, because I love how we can both very much just empathize with that feeling of being confused and wanting to take in the next best thing that's going to heal us. But it's all for naught if we don't have that foundation of self-trust and that intimacy of a relationship with ourselves. So we start there, and I love that we see eye to eye on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so important. So important. And we could do a whole podcast episode just talking about that, but I did want to ask you about a couple other things because I know that you talk a lot about metabolic health, and I think that aligns really perfectly, obviously, with the podcast and what everybody here listening is sort of starting to learn about and dive into. So I'm wondering if you can explain briefly, you know, in simplicity in terms, you know, what is metabolic health and how do you approach that, you know, and what you call metabolic mastery from the perspective of this functionally trained dietitian that you are, you know, because I think there's a lot of us, you know, when I look back before I got into learning about nutrition and health and my body, you know, I would hear the word metabolism, right? And I would just think, well, it's you either have good metabolism or you don't. Like even in my family, my dad had good metabolism. He was thin and fit and he could eat whatever he wanted. And my mom didn't have good metabolism. She was overweight and unhealthy. And, you know, that was kind of my reference as a child as to like, what is metabolism, right? You're either skinny or you're not. And it's so much more than that. So I would love to hear, you know, your perspective on that.
Yes, this is the conversation I love starting because you're absolutely right. We have been taught to reduce metabolism down to purely even just weight. And then from there we go, you have a good metabolism or a bad metabolism. And that in and of itself can be debilitating to someone's agency. So when I talk about metabolic health, I love starting with just the pure definition of metabolic health. And ultimately, my favorite way to describe metabolic health is describing it as the song of the cell. We have, as humans, between 30 and 50 trillion cells, and their song is to take the information from our environment and from our food and make energy out of it. That is what the cells love to do. It is their pride and joy. It is their mission in life. And so when we feel symptoms of brain fog, fatigue, and anxiety, and mood swings, and all of these different misalignments that I felt, of course, as a collegiate swimmer, I know we've all felt at one time in our life, that in some way, shape, or form relates back to the cell taking in the information you're giving it and making something meaningful out of it. And if that information is unclear or inconsistent, or maybe there's too much information coming in at once, that cell is going to have trouble making meaningful use of it and energy from it. So we think of metabolic health as purely weight, but I love to help women, again, reclaim a bit more responsibility over their metabolic health by looking at it from so many different angles and approaching it from even more angles. Because I think when it comes to metabolic health, specifically when we're trying to lose weight, we try to do one thing really well. And if that doesn't work, we try to do it harder. And if that doesn't work, then we get really hard on ourselves and start over. And it's the definition of insanity. And the reason I love what you do and the women you serve and the just the way you approach metabolic health is you come at it from a very specific angle, which is so paramount. This freedom from sugar impacts our blood sugar regulation. And that is one facet of many, one trailhead of many, giving you the opportunity to approach your metabolic health synergistically from a few very gentle angles. And as you know, when you complement blood sugar regulation with, say, sleep, with cortisol regulation, with microbiome health, it absolutely amplifies the effect.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I think that's really important what you were just sharing there, a little bit of a list of some of these ways that we can support our metabolic health. So you said sleep, you said, you know, a couple other really brilliant things. I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that of like what, you know, outside of blood sugar regulation, obviously, mm-hmm. right? What are the tools that we really need to focus on or the areas of our health to really support our metabolism? And why is it important to actually support our metabolism?
Right. So starting with the why is it important, when you are giving your cells information that they understand, they can actually create something of use to you, namely energy like ATP, but they create the ability to heal your body. And we talked about this in the beginning of the call, which is our bodies are actually designed to heal themselves. So when you are giving them information that they understand, you are actually improving their metabolic capacity to heal, their metabolic capacity to create energy. And so all of these symptoms of metabolic misalignment, like just even slow healing, all relate back to the cells not getting enough of what they need, or in many cases, information they don't even understand. And that's really what I feel like we're coming up against in a more modern day world, is we have access to all the information we could want through food and through our environmental cues. These are all sentences of instructions to the cells to do what they're designed to do. But because we have access to information that's processed. So for instance, with food, processed food is processed information. And when I describe this to kids or maybe someone who's new to metabolic health, I basically describe that as though it's a sentence where words have been taken out. So it takes longer for the body to interpret and it may not actually use it very efficiently. So when it comes to optimizing this metabolic health and optimizing this, the cell's capacity to make meaningful use of information, I see there as being six trailheads, one of which is blood sugar regulation. I love that you've covered that so thoroughly, because I will tell you, most women coming into the practice have never once even checked their blood sugar and also feel baffled by it, because it's something that happens beneath the surface that you don't necessarily feel moment to moment. So that's a huge trailhead. But there's five others that complement it beautifully. And one that I think is so just beautifully aligned with blood sugar regulation is just even the timing of when we eat and the timing of when we actually perform rituals and routines. This is such a metabolic optimizer to eat at consistent times, giving your body time and space to use the information you've given it and to perform habits at specific times with consistency to give your body the impression that it's safe. So sometimes when clients come barreling in my door and want to know exactly how to eat, I pause and I take a few steps back and I say, before we get carried away with perfecting what goes in, what about if we take a moment to evaluate where it fits? Because when you look at the timing of when you eat, and maybe even performing something as simple as a circadian fast where you just eat in the daylight hours, that in and of itself regulates your hunger and satiety cues in such a way that you don't stress about the food you're eating half as much anyhow. So timing is huge, and I'll just simplify it by saying timing of food for this conversation, but you could take it out of context and say timing of when you go to bed, timing of when you wake up, timing of when you work out. I think there's so much power and I see so much potency and being thoughtful about when you do what you do, giving you the opportunity to evaluate if it even fits.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. Yeah, and you know what's coming up for me as you share that is, because that's something that I even struggle with, and a lot of people listening are really, like, we live in such a culture where we are encouraged to have these sort of routines, right? Like, do, you know, wake up at six, do your meditation, you know, all these beautiful habits that are absolutely, as you're saying, really powerful to set your metabolism and just your whole body up for a great day or for a healthy life. Where's the space in that to also allow for some flow? You know, this is a curiosity for me, right? Is, yes, I can get really way too rigid, like being, yes, in my masculine brain, being planning, organizing, scheduling, and that, mm-hmm, doesn't always serve me. It actually can create more anxiety in my life, more dysregulation in my nervous system. Something that I'm playing with is finding a better balance with also having some feminine flow energy in my life, yes, which is really hard to have consistent routines if I'm in like my feminine flowing time. So I don't know if you have anything that you could share on that. Like, how do we find that balance between like what you're saying and having these things timed, especially meals, mm-hmm, versus also allowing for like, what if I'm not hungry at noon, right? Or I'm not hungry, yes, at that point, and also trusting my body and what it needs around that.
I adore this question because it really punctuates what ultimately makes us human again. We're not robots. So to jot all of these things down in pen and then put them into cement really takes away the flow and the intuition, right? So when I put together a bit of structure, I'm always going to be writing it in pencil with a big eraser. Because when you come up on something that's planned or come up on a meal that's maybe consistent with the time that you had it yesterday. So let's take a very tangible example, dinner. Let's say that we're working on timing dinner in such a way that you're not eating right before you go to bed, which optimizes your blood sugar and gives you a chance to use that information and heal the body and recalibrate. But it's 6 o'clock and you're just not hungry. That's when you had planned to eat dinner, and just, it would be an act of force or an act of will. And I think we both agree that we don't want to willpower our way through life. We erase it. That dinner that was planned is something that we put on pause, because what we're doing is we're tuning into the most powerful information source, which is our intuitive needs being met and really aligning with those. And so I really like to describe, as I build out a day, almost like an architect drawing out the blueprint of a design. It's all in pencil so that you actually see the structure of it. But as you approach it, you have enough practice tuning into what your body needs that you have the confidence and perspective to set it aside, because for whatever reason, that day, it's not serving what you need. If you approach life like that, you have this beautiful balance that you're striking, this polarity between this more masculine way of approaching your day with things scheduled and the more feminine question mark of where does this fit? Is this actually what my body needs today? And when you feel confident enough to make those decisions a bit, they're game time decisions, right? Then what you do every time that you practice the skill set of erasing something because it's not aligned with what you need, then what you're doing is you're telling your body that you've got its back. You're making sure that it feels safe and nurtured instead of forcing your way through it saying, well, this is what was scheduled, a 6 p.m. dinner. And when your body feels safe, it heals faster, it uses fuel more efficiently, and what you're doing as well is you're creating enough confidence to take even more maybe noise and interventions and obligations off because you've had such a good experience fluidly taking what you need and releasing the rest. It's an art form, but it is an act of release.
Yeah. So beautifully said. And just for everybody listening, like what Ellie is talking about takes a lot of practice, right? Takes some time to reconnect to these parts of ourselves. And I absolutely love supporting women doing this as well. It takes a lot of time to turn back into those cues. And to also, I'm just thinking of a call I had on in my group yesterday, this perfectionism that comes up a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I have to eat perfectly according to schedule, or there's a lot of pressure that we put on ourselves. So allowing that, writing that in pencil, I absolutely love that. And allowing yourself to really flow when that feels right and not. Another sort of like challenge, I'm just thinking of all of you listeners and my clients that I see show up a lot, there is also this conundrum between, for example, the 6 o'clock, right? I'm not hungry at 6 o'clock. I know a lot of women override their natural hunger cues by staying busy,
yes.
Right? I know that there's a lot of times, even for me, on days when there's a lot going on at work, I forget to eat lunch. So was I actually not hungry, or was I not pausing enough to actually check in to the hunger cues that my body was sending me? So in that, you know, at 6 o'clock comes around, you know, the invitation there is to actually pause, right? If that's when you were supposed to eat dinner, and actually tune into what is truth. Like, am I truly not hungry, or am I just too busy to even think about food? And maybe that's a cue to slow down, take a deep breath, and come back into like really tuning into what the body needs.
Well, I just appreciate that you called it an invitation. That's exactly the language I use when I architect someone's day, is we use all of these placeholders as truly that invitation. It's almost like a gentle mother saying, hey, come on into the dinner. Come into the kitchen. Are you hungry for dinner? And if you don't have that gentle nudge, you're exactly right. Our prefrontal cortex can take over, and we can be very maybe entrenched in a creative process and completely override these bottom-up cues of true hunger. And over time, that can feel like it becomes the norm, which is why, to your point, this takes time to come back to that space where you actually know what true hunger is and feels like in your body in opposition to psychological appetite. There's a difference there, but it takes really navigating both all the time and being aware enough to notice the difference on what is true hunger and what psychological appetite to be able to confidently honor those true hunger needs and be able to satisfy in a very thoughtful way the psychological appetite, which doesn't necessarily require food.
Yeah. Yeah, so beautiful. Okay, so you said that there were 6 trailheads, right?
Yes,
into
yes.
sort of metabolic health. So you've talked about, obviously, blood sugar regulation. We've talked about sort of the timing of food and of rituals. What else is there?
Well, I think the natural segue would then be into one that the wellness industry loves, and it can be very adamant about different ways of approaching this, but is nutrient repletion. Specifically, when I look at the the biochemistry of especially the female body and our nutrition needs. We have both macronutrient needs and we have micronutrient needs. And the macronutrient needs are more structural and energetic, and the micronutrient needs are a bit more chemical in nature, in that they help really catalyze different reactions in the body. And what I would say across the board, no matter what background you come from, whether you're plant-based or strictly carnivore, I'm pretty agnostic to any of it. What I see, though, as a predominant nutrient missing when it comes to metabolic health, when it comes to the cell being able to use fuel efficiently and not be bottlenecked, creating maybe a fuel excess, is protein. Protein is a macronutrient that I would say is just maybe a little bit misunderstood. I think a lot of women are, maybe they understand where protein comes from, but at the end of the day, what I think is a big point of confusion is how much is necessary to rebuild the body, how much is necessary to anchor blood sugar, and how much is necessary as we age. So when I look at how women age across the decades, and I'm very passionate about helping women understand how our needs are different in the body of today than they were maybe a year ago, even 10 years ago, especially 20 years ago, protein is one of those nutrients that I think gets overlooked often. And some of that is, as we age, we need more help rebuilding the body so that we don't break down faster than we're rebuilding. Our stomach acid also declines as we age, so we don't use as much of it as effectively. But also, I just think there is this subtle fear of eating too much protein. And so I know as a collegiate athlete, I would just maybe throw a few walnuts on a salad and say, there's my protein for my meal, when really I don't see enough education being given on how much protein is actually adequate, how to make protein consumption easy, especially if you don't eat all different types of protein, and how to really create a scenario where you can keep up with your body as you age and you can increase the amount you eat effortlessly. So nutrient repletion is something that you can evaluate from multiple different angles. You can run lab work and see what nutrients might be missing from different analyses. But I just kind of start with simple and go with the basic foundation. And when it comes to macronutrients, beautiful place to start is getting your protein needs met with consistency and increasing that amount across the lifespan to keep up with how quickly your body needs protein to rebuild.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Thank you for bringing that in. I got, as the Canadian here, I got to also throw in vitamin D. Like, we don't get enough of it.
Yes, we don't. And thank you for chiming in there. There's just these baseline nutrients that, you know, different schools of nutrition and medicine are maybe in conflict around how to approach a plate. And sometimes I feel like it's just the little biochemist who's maybe agnostic to all of it. I think, well, let's just make sure we're getting baseline nutrients no matter how you approach it. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Vitamin D is often overlooked as one of the micronutrients, as is magnesium. And protein as one of the macronutrients is often overlooked because there's so much conflict around low carb, high fat, keto versus non. There's so much going around in that world between carb and fat that the unsung hero of the day is protein.
Right. That's a good, really good point, right? We are, I'm in that industry, right? Where everybody's just talking about carbs and fat. And I'm really grateful for people like you. And I know a lot of others who are toting about the importance of bioavailable protein and the importance of that as we age. And I actually want to make sure that we have time to get into that, because I think this is an area of like your zone of genius about how we can stay on track in each of those decades of our lives as we age. But before we do, I want to make sure we finish these trailheads. So you're going through this beautiful list of these six. So what are the last three?
Yeah. And I'll quickly run through these because they definitely appeal to different audiences, but they are prominent trailheads that I think get overlooked beneath the surface. And one is the microbiome. So once we've eaten, what makes use of that information, right? And we have this tribe of helpers waiting to to use this fuel and even give fuel back. So when you eat, your microbiome takes in that information and gives you even more meaningful information to use from it. So when there's microbiome scarcity, you see it show up in blood work. You see it show up in blood sugar regulation. There's species of bacteria like Acromantia that play a role in actually anchoring blood sugar and improving insulin sensitivity. So the microbiome is something that I very much tune into pretty early on in care. And there's very simple ways to support it that don't take much effort at all, simply by eating little bites of different plants you haven't had in a while. That's one strategy. And another is truly just to consistently weave in fermented foods. When you pair these two, it takes very little heavy lifting because it's not mountains of plants. It's just diversity. And then you get their buy-in. You get this microbiome's weigh-in. And I always like to relate the microbiome to minions. So you imagine these minions in your gut absolutely going to work on your behalf. And when you think about it like that, I feel like somehow there's this extra little nudge of excitement about it. So microbiome is one. And then the segue to from that is the microbiome also, once they've given back information, having processed the fuel you've consumed, they also help you release metabolic waste. So we get so focused on our inputs and this information that helps the metabolism sing, when really, can we make sure that we're releasing as quickly as we're taking in? So the fifth trailhead is drainage and detox. Are we seeing bowel movements every single day? Are you sweating? Are you breathing more heavily through maybe a brisk walk? These are all pathways where your body releases metabolic waste after it's used the fuel. And especially in our day and age where we're inundated with maybe more chemicals and more pollutants, releasing waste is even more important than before.
Yeah. Yeah. Powerful. Thank you so much for sharing those. Yeah, I mean, each of those could be a podcast episode on their own. I really appreciate that.
I know, a little series, mini series.
Little mini series coming at you. Stay tuned, everybody. Yes. But I absolutely love those. And thank you for sharing, you know, this little bit of a blueprint. I think that's really helpful for everybody listening, that these are areas that we can start looking at. And how easy is it for us and everyone maybe listening to become obsessed over blood sugar, right? And to just focus on this one pathway when there's so much involved. And it's all connected. These are not separate things, right? Our microbiome and our insulin and our brain and our nerves and our livers, you know, all everything's connected here. Thank you for bringing that forward. Okay. So you mentioned a little bit ago about needing more protein as we age in these decades. And I absolutely love what you share online and the conversations that you have around understanding that our bodies, especially as women, are changing every decade, right? Or maybe even less. And I know so many of my clients and listeners, and I shared with you before we hit record on this, like even myself, as I'm getting closer to 40, I'm noticing some of these hormonal shifts. I'm noticing some of these changes. So I know a lot of my clients struggle with getting, like having everything figured out, and then all of a sudden what worked is no longer working. So what do you do to help women navigate that? You know, when, you know, what we thought was working before, we used to be able to just out exercise, you know, our bad diet, or these things didn't really, we used to be able to have a glass of wine and have a great sleep. And now we can't do that anymore. Right. Yeah. I'm starting to notice that with coffee, like, okay, it's starting to affect my sleep in ways that it didn't before. Like, what the heck's going on? So how do we actually like sustain our wellness goals through each of those decades of life? And perhaps like, how do we mentally start wrapping our head around finding new ways of reaching our goals and staying on track when our body and our hormones are changing?
Right. So I would say this is, not to sound maybe too kitschy about it, but this truly is the linchpin I see to everyone's wellness journey, which is the increased and amplified and punctuated sense of awareness, really zooming out and really getting the full perspective of what's going on by tracking yourself. Watch yourself as though you're watching or studying like a bug in nature, a cute little ladybug. You're watching yourself go through the day and really navigate the stressors that you're coming up against. Get your lab work run your hormones, like really before you take action in any stage of life. I give this task to a 20-year-old and I give this task to a 60-year-old. We can't take action on these changes you're feeling if you don't exactly know the extent of the change. So that would be number one. And it's something that I just absolutely fill tool baskets to the brim with, our awareness tools to really tune into the cell-to-soul experience of a human being. But what I would say is most impactful, or maybe makes the biggest imprint on us as we age, is our tolerance to stress. And so as women, we have this really precious hormone called progesterone, and it declines naturally as we age. That's to be expected. And so what happens as we encounter stress while our progesterone is declining is we start to become less tolerant to it. When cortisol, the stress hormone in our body, goes high, progesterone goes high. So ultimately that means that we start to lose our sense of groundedness around these subtle and not so subtle stressors faster than we used to. We become disintegrated faster than we used to. So things that used to feel like maybe hardly a thing, not a stress, a hard workout, or maybe sleepless night, you could bounce back the next day, jump right into your obligations and be fine. Whereas now, maybe a hard workout or an extra glass of wine or a poor night of sleep has just completely floored you. So with this sense of awareness, what you're going to gather is the capacity to interrupt patterns of subtle and not so subtle stress in really thoughtful and actually approachable ways. I think the whole world of, you know, telling women that stress is bad for them is not one that I want to contribute to. Instead, I want women to be aware of their stress patterns and actually equip their body for that stress if it's a necessary stress. For instance, you know, I would call working out a necessary stress. I think being active is a stress on the body that we are meant to endure, but are we equipping our body appropriately for that stressor? And often I think what really, what changes our health story as we age is we aren't aware of where most of our stressors are coming from, and we aren't equipping that stress appropriately. We aren't equipping long days of Zoom calls back to back appropriately. We aren't equipping a sleepless night appropriately. And so that is where I see the most work needing to be done as women as we age, is really getting a granular perspective on where our stressors are coming from. I give my clients this worksheet called a tolerance worksheet, and I essentially have them for a week build out a list of everything that they tolerate every day. That loud noise, this commute, this Zoom call, whatever it is, these tolerances, because we can all relate to that word tolerate. Oh yeah, I just tolerate that. I tolerate that. And often, some of the tolerances, the things that we just absolutely have gotten used to, are things that can be removed from the system. But the ones that can't, our obligations, our responsibilities as maybe mothers, and maybe in our jobs and our work, maybe some of these things that are tough and we have to tolerate merely just need to be equipped with the right amount of information through food or maybe nervous system support, that doesn't pose itself as such a threat to the body. And when it doesn't pose as big of a threat, we preserve more of our progesterone. And because progesterone makes us feel so calm and so grounded, what we're going to find is that we can navigate stress with more ease and more grace and bounce back from it a bit more quickly.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's really, really insightful, really beautiful. I hope everybody's really listening to that. Hayden, as you're talking, I'm thinking about even my own life and the changes I've noticed in my sleep. And now, because I'm so aware of my body, like, okay, I'm going to prioritize going to bed a bit earlier. I'm going to prioritize these things that I know that my body is telling me I need. I think one of the things that I get a lot of feedback from my clients as they age is this resistance to that process. So the word that comes up as you're talking is acceptance as well, mm-hmm. right? Acceptance that we are aging. And that means our hormones are going to change. Our tolerance to stress is going to change. Our blood sugar might change. Our needs are going to change. And I think there's this perception in our society that it's kind of like set it and forget it. Like we figure out what works for our health and it should stay that way for the rest of our life. And we're not so good at ebbing and flowing, right? And at like rolling with the punches and going, okay, that used to work. Now it doesn't. Okay. What's going to work now? And I think think there's an acceptance piece in that, that we need to understand we're forever evolving mentally, physically, spiritually, our lifestyle, the people in our lives, right? Friendships coming and going, jobs coming and going, like all of this is part of like our evolution as humans. That goes with our body as well. So I don't know, that was just really coming up as you were sharing that beautiful message around stress. Like there's an acceptance piece here.
Yes, I love that. And I would say then even once you get to the place of acceptance, can we go one step further as a collective and go from acceptance to a celebration? Can aging be this space of reclaiming power? And with wisdom comes so much perspective. And I think to your point, it's there is this fear that's associated with these shifts when once you've accepted them and understand them through that sense of awareness, then you can absolutely grab life by the reins and celebrate the next step, knowing you have a bigger tool basket than ever before. That's kind of how I describe aging to my clients, is every day, put a new tool in your life's tool basket that you're going to pull out tomorrow, so that by the time you are that fierce, fabulous 80-year-old, you've got the world's largest tool basket and you're kicking butt and taking names.
I love it. That's me. I want that to be me.
Yes, you and me both, sister.
Yeah, and as you're just sharing that too, I mean, the piece around who you surround yourself with is really coming up. Because I can see, like for myself, example, like my husband and I try to be in bed, not asleep, but at 8:30, which is crazy for a lot of people. Like, are you crazy? Right. You're lame, Danny. I'm the one leaving parties early. And I'm okay with being a little bit different and for standing up for what I need. But I know a lot of my clients don't and really struggle with that piece. A lot of women really struggle with speaking up for what they need because it's going to go against what their like social network may think, right? Whether it's giving up sugar or going to bed early or not drinking coffee or like whatever these choices are that you're making because you know what you need at whatever stage or decade of life you're in, right? Sometimes those are really radical, right? And sometimes they are going to take a bit of like your own self-confidence and possibly finding new friends. Like I'm going to say that's something that I have to go through.
I was going to go there. Yes. Because when you don't feel celebrated by the people you surround yourself with, humans don't continue something that they feel criticized for. We don't heal through punishing our way there. We heal through celebrating our way there. Yeah. And so even if you looked at the anatomy or architecture of a habit, really habits only get formed when they're rewarded. So your husband being in bed at 8:30, right there beside you, is a form of celebration that tags in your brain to do that habit again tomorrow. But if you were sneaking into bed at 8:30, feeling slightly bad that you're missing out on this time with your husband, your brain is basically going to tag that as something to possibly not repeat tomorrow because it wasn't life-giving. So if you just boil it down to our life being a navigation of what's safe and what's not safe, really creating an environment where the things you want to repeat feel really safe and celebrated is going to make this process of claiming wellness so much easier.
Yeah, 100%. This is a beautiful thing or space to sort of wrap things up here. I want to keep talking to you about habits and there's so many questions that I have for you, but I want to be respectful of everybody's time. So this has been incredible, Ellie. I love where we kind of flowed with this. I didn't ask you half the questions that I wanted to, but everything, you know, really was really needed here. Yeah, totally. You're back. You're coming back. There's a series, right? We're talking about a whole series.
Six-part series.
So yeah, thank you so much for that. And I'm just curious if there's any like final pieces on your heart here that you feel like you didn't get to say today that feel really important. And then also please share a little bit about how you work with clients and where people can find you to come and check out more of what you're doing online.
Yeah. I would say the most important thing for me to make very clear any chance I get to speak about this with other women is to really claim and maybe remain committed to a sense of compassion with yourself as you make your way through any of this. I think we're spoon-fed opportunities to be very critical and to maybe point out where we missed the boat or where we failed, but really where I see the most effortlessly well women thriving is the space where they just approach things from this beautiful human-centered space of grace and compassion as they try new things and stumble and fall and try them again. When you come at life through that sense of just playful compassion and not maybe willpower-driven martyrdom, what you'll find is that so much of this wellness puzzle doesn't even feel like a puzzle anymore. It feels like the things that are meant for you come into your life with more ease and more effortlessness. And anytime that I'm teaching on a big public stage, I end every lecture just reminding my audience to reclaim that compassion piece, because we're given many reminders not to. And I will just say it's very contagious in the best way possible to be around women who are so deeply compassionate, not only with others, but certainly with themselves.
Yeah. So beautiful. I love that. Mm-hmm. Compassion is so something that many of us have forgotten, right? Many women have forgotten. I absolutely love that message. So where can everybody come and find more about you, Ellie, and come and connect with you and keep the conversation going?
Yes, I love that. So I think women heal together in community, speaking about compassion, where we can show compassion to one another in the midst of ourselves. So I have a beautiful group of women over in my neck of the woods at Simply Nourished Nutrition. I have a membership called The Table, where we all walk beside each other in different facets of our wellness. And while I do have private practice, what I love seeing anytime I graduate a woman from my care is them being able to sustain their agency and sustain their triumphant just stepwise journey forward in the context of others. So The Table is meant to be a space where women can do that. And every quarter of the year, we dedicate our time to a different topic of health. So the first quarter is my favorite. It's metabolic health. And the second quarter is energy and adrenal health. The third quarter is hormone balance. And the fourth quarter is digestion. And every week we just meet to learn about one new habit a week. We call it the goddess habit because women who work with me are royalty. I always make sure they know that. And it's my favorite thing I do. And so I love any opportunity like this where I can give women access to that type of conversation, because I think it's one that breeds healing from soul to soul.
Yeah. Oh, so powerful. So beautiful, Ellie. Thank you so much. I'll, of course, make sure all the links to connect with Ellie are below in the show notes. So you can go and connect there. And we're just so grateful for you taking the time to join us on the show today, Ellie. And we can't wait to have you back.
Well, thank you for this platform. I love your show. And I very much just refer so many of my clients to it because of the way that you approach wellness. You embody compassion so beautifully. So thank you for the work you do.
Oh, thank you, Ellie. I'm receiving that fully. Thank you so much. And of course, a huge thank you to all of you listening. Thank you so much for being here on another episode, and we look forward to seeing you on the next one. See you soon. Thank you for tuning into another episode. If you're loving what we talked about today, please take a minute to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone you love. It helps us in a big way reach more people and change more lives. And if you're ready to go deeper into discovering your unique root causes and patterns that are keeping you hooked on sugar, be sure to check out our brand new free quiz that will tell you which root cause is holding you back from freedom with food and give you the healing action steps to break free from these old patterns for good. Find the link to take the free quiz and other amazing resources in the show notes below.